KPFA Radio presents A Rude Awakening, a weekly update on climate change and its effects on a local, national, and international level, with interviews and commentary, hosted by Sabrina Jacobs. This show includes interviews with the people in the community that make this global village what it is, from frontline activists to politicians, scientists, and some celebrities. Please enjoy this episode of A Rude Awakening, which previously aired live on KPFA Radio.
This is A Rude Awakening. I'm Sabrina Jacobs. On today's show, I'll speak to Gabrielle Mayangadzi, Program Manager for SAFSI, South African Faith Communities Environment Institute, about the rebranding of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation's organization, Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa, and their upcoming summit of self-aggrandizement and lies being held in Tanzania. But first, the news.
I'm Christina Onnestead with KPFA News Headlines. The Biden administration has proposed a new rule that expands background check requirements for firearms dealers. Alex Gonzalez reports.
Sellers online or at gun shows would be required to be licensed and conduct background checks on buyers. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre calls the move an effective tool to reduce gun violence.
This administration respects the right of responsible gun owners while also believing Americans have the right to live free from gun violence as well. Those two things can exist.
The proposed rule will go through the federal rulemaking process and comes as the country continues to endure increased gun violence. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Two former Proud Boys members were sentenced to 15 and 17 years in prison Thursday for spearheading the deadly January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol to try to keep Donald Trump in power after the Republican lost the 2020 election to Democrat Joe Biden. Joseph Biggs was sentenced to 17 years. Zachary Eel sentenced to 15 years, some of the longest sentences handed down out of more than 600 successful prosecutions against participants in the deadly siege on January 6, 2021 against the U.S. Capitol. Prosecutors had sought 33 years for Biggs, 30 years for Eel. Dozens of Proud Boy members were among the first to breach the U.S. Capitol. Prosecutors shared emails and text messages about their organizing efforts after Trump called for the January 6 rally. Their defense attorneys said their clients were seduced by Donald Trump's rhetoric.
If your president tells you your country's been stolen, the country that people fought and died for, people are trying to take your vote from you, how are you supposed to react to that? And these people reacted violently and to their detriment. I think these cases are grotesquely overcharged.
They were the first Proud Boys to be sentenced. Two other Proud Boys face sentencing today. Former leader Enrique Tarrio faces a sentencing next week. A new report from the ACLU of Northern California finds state prison officials with the CDCR, California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, are regularly collaborating with ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials, to identify and deport incarcerated people in the state's prisons, including at least a dozen U.S. citizens. The report, Profile, Tag, Deport, CDCR, betrays California's values, analyzed some 2,500 records obtained through a Public Records Act request. It uncovered 65,000 records. The group has yet to receive them all. KPFA News spoke with Sana Singh, an immigrant rights fellow with the ACLU of Northern California.
The 12 people, the majority of them who have their place of birth listed as the United States, but were nonetheless referred to ICE, did have non-Anglo-Saxon last names.
What do you think about that?
I think it's clear that it's well established that the criminal legal system has pervasively discriminated against Black and Brown people. And so to see that then flow into CDCR's practices around collaboration with U.S. immigration enforcement is really concerning and draws deep concerns about what this, our largest publicly funded state agency, believes makes someone Californian, because it's certainly not your last name or the color of your skin or the language that you speak. that makes people deserving and worthy of being in the United States.
She said the ACLU previously sued to stop the detention of a U.S. citizen in ICE custody. California is a sanctuary state, which bars collusion with federal immigration authorities, but Singh says the state law has a carve-out exempting the state prison system. She says the Home Act pending in the state legislature would stop the practice of state prisons handing over people to federal immigration authorities. AB 1306 passed the assembly and is in the Senate Appropriations suspense file. It's backed by San Francisco Senator Scott Wiener and San Jose Assemblyman Ash Kalra, who are co-authors. The legislative session ends September 14th. Environmental groups are pushing a slate of bills that address wind power in the state. Suzanne Potter reports.
Assembly Bill 3 would require the state to study improvements to port infrastructure to move power into the grid. And AB 80 would research impacts on the ocean ecosystem. Former state Senator Fran Pavley, now with the USC Schwarzenegger Institute, says offshore wind will help California become energy independent.
We can create the jobs here, the supply chain, and actually produce the energy here, especially when it's renewable energy that does not pollute the environment and helps us reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. I think that's a win-win for everyone.
I'm Suzanne Potter.
Republican lawmakers and others gathered in Sacramento to oppose a slate of bills Thursday they call soft on crime. Those bills get a hearing today in the legislature. Christopher Martinez reports.
We need to make crime illegal again in California.
Assembly Republican leader James Gallagher of Yuba City joined other Republican lawmakers, crime victims, and small business owners for a Californians Against Crime rally opposing a batch of measures. One of the measures to restore voting rights to convicted felons. Assembly Constitutional Amendment 4 by Democratic Assemblymember Isaac Bryan of Los Angeles would bring California in line with Vermont, Maine, Washington, D.C., and Puerto Rico, restoring voting rights for some 120,000 Californians. Another bill they're opposing is SB 94, which would let some persons sentenced to life without the possibility of parole petition a judge for a new sentence after they've served at least 25 years in prison. Small business owners spoke passionately against Senate Bill 553 by Democratic Senator Dave Cortese of San Jose. Cortese says his bill is aimed at protecting employees from violent confrontations with shoplifters, but the business owners say it would raise their costs and increase bureaucratic red tape. Jaskaran Sahota is with JKSD Gas and Mini Marts.
This SB 553 is going to kill us all.
I'm Christopher Martinez.
The environmental group Food and Water Watch is warning a new report from the Biden administration's National Infrastructure Advisory Council calls for a U.S. Department of Water and for the removal of barriers for the privatization of water systems. Food and Water Watch in a statement said the head of the advisory council is the CEO of Global Infrastructure Partners, an investment bank with an estimated $100 billion in assets that target energy, transportation, and water infrastructure. Food and Water Watch Public Water for All campaign director Mary Grant said privatization is a terrible idea. Privately owned water systems charge 59% more than local government systems. Weather forecast for the Bay Area today, cloudy on the coast, highs in the upper 60s to the 70s around the Bay. In Fresno and the central San Joaquin Valley, areas of smoke, highs 90 degrees. I'm Christina Onnestad reporting for KPFA.
Welcome back. We are back. This is A Rude Awakening. I'm Sabrina Jacobs. The latest piece in the Interpress News by Timothy A. Wise entitled Digging Africa Deeper into Hunger, Annual Green Revolution Forum Ignores Widespread Failure of Its Push for Industrial Wise Right Agriculture. And farmer organizations are calling on African leaders and the donors who support them to put down the Green Revolution shovels, climb out of the hole, survey the damage their failing agricultural development model has wrought, and change course to more farmer-centered and sustainable ecological agriculture. And that came out earlier this week. Now, I just want to note that this interview was being recorded or is being recorded ahead of the conference on the 30th. And this is a conference that's being put on by AFSA, Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa. It's a conference that's entitled No Decisions About Us Without Us.
no decisions about us without us. Leading American farmer groups challenge Agra Summit over corporate dominance. And here to talk about it is one of the panelists at that conference. And his name is Gabriel Mayangadzi, and he's the program manager at SAFSI, South African Faith Communities Environment Institute. Gabriel, it has been too long. It is wonderful to have you back on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sabrina, for having me on this show. I'm so thrilled to be back again, and we hope to take the discussion that we've had last time further.
Absolutely. Well, your organization, your coalition of organizations, AFSA's coalition of organizations, I mean, folks have been coming together all across the continent of Africa, and you've been doing so much work and doing everything you can to level the playing field. So talk to us about why this conference has been convened by AFSA, again, Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa. Go right ahead.
Thank you very much for that. The reason why we are convening this is the amount of injustice that we see when the issues of the African smallholder farmer is being discussed, and it is being discussed without him or with an exclusionary fee being posted on this particular conference. We are actually concerned that there is very little consultation of the African smallholder farmer on issues that affect him or her directly. And this is one thing that we are very much concerned about and would want to offer an opportunity to speak about the alternative, about what should happen, and also to set the record straight in terms of the involvement of those that are affected. And this is why we are saying it is not a complete discussion without us, because there is a contribution that we can make, a contribution that would bring real change, and not to offer the temporary solutions that we are getting when we have the Gates-led propositions of farming style that is happening now, where we have chemical intensive farming happening in our backyard without us being involved and also without being consulted.
Exactly. It's audacious, and it's rude, and it's not fair at all. It's egregious, to say the least, because how can there be consultation? You know, how can there be any type of movement in a country that doesn't belong to you, that's not yours, without any consultation by the people? I mean, it's just plain and simple there. And I really, really appreciate the name that AFSA gave the whole conference. You know, no decisions about us without us. I mean, come on, this is ridiculous. You know, UN figures show a 34% increase in number of undernourished Tanzanians, just Tanzania as an example, since 2006. 2006 is when AGRA became what it is, this so-called techno fixer of hunger in Africa. Africa and Africans can feed themselves. Go ahead, Gabriel.
Yes. The problem with the whole issues, I think, starting from 2006, is that those that intervened and those that decided were those that were not directly affected, and they did so without consulting those that are affected, and also trying to figure out exactly why is it that people undernourished, maybe that percentage which was there in 2006, they did not go back to say why are they undernourished, of which when we look at it closely, we actually see that those that caused the problem in the first place are the ones that are trying to resolve it without involving those that are affected. Because in the first place, we have had a time when people have been affected by weather conditions, but they were resilient enough to bounce back and be able to feed themselves whenever the weather would improve. But with the kind and with the system that is now in place, it takes away the resilience that people had, because people, despite that, would have droughts maybe for a year or for two seasons. People would still have a fallback position because they would have their seed with them, a seed that was well adapted and a seed that had been kept within the different families for decades or at times for generations. So it is important that we should look back and say the people of Africa can feed themselves as long as we have the right type of farming taking place in Africa. A farming where people do not become dependent on outside seed manufacturers for them to be able to go to the field and plant and have their own food. A system where we will have to depend on chemicals that are imported, and a system where we would have to buy for more and sell for less, and a system which does not recognize that there are other crops besides the ones that they are pushing down our throats, which we were dependent upon, those that are nutrient dense and are well adapted to our conditions and systems. And these are the ones that have been excluded even from the agri pack of seeds. The ones that are nutrient dense have not been included. And those are also important. And if this recognition that what we use to grow is also part and parcel of our food basket, we would be going somewhere. But right now, they've excluded these. And the type of agriculture that we are having now of lots of chemicals in terms of the fertilizers, the pesticides, and the herbicides is actually not good for the seeds that we have been using for our millet, for our sorghum, for our rapoco, and for all other crops that we used to grow. So without this interference, and maybe with the support on the seeds that we needed, on the crops that we needed, we would be self-sufficient and be able to have our own food and enough to share with others. And mark this word when I'm saying to share, because from our perspective, even when we are selling, we are not selling at a price that is a ripoff like what we are having in terms of the chemicals and the fertilizers that are coming in now, particularly now with the war in Russia and Ukraine. Prices have gone right through the roof, and even those that were forced to go into this system of agriculture are unable to afford it, which means we are sinking deeper and deeper into the quagmire of the chemical intense type of agriculture that is being forced on us. So we need to be freed so that we are able to feed ourselves. Thank you.
Absolutely, most definitely. And it's a freedom that, you know, at this point is being demanded. You know, it's to me, being on the outside, you know, being on the periphery, you know, trying to keep a consistent reporting on what's been happening as far as this so-called Green Revolution that Bill Gates's organization and the rest of his billionaire friends, you know, and U.S. taxpayers and European taxpayers are buying into or being forced to buy into. You know, it's like we don't know what's going on, and we need to stay abreast of what is happening. So this is wonderful that this conference is happening. It's wonderful that this pushback is happening. And it seems like there's three main components to this that you just named, Gabriel. Mayungadzi, it's the people that are forced into it, right? And now they're in debt to agra and this green revolution. It's the monoculture that is ruining the soil. As far as it's only they're only wanting to plant rice and corn, maize, and it's the fact that the African leaders are allowing this to happen. Those are the three main components. Are there any other aspects to what is happening that I'm forgetting right now? Because it's all around just horrible. It's all, you know, all of it is horrible, but it's important to itemize what is going on. It's important to categorize each segment of how we're, you know, the multifacetedness of this assault on the continent of Africa. Go ahead.
Yes, maybe you mentioned three, but we can also add the fourth one, which is the forced legislation that has actually criminalized the use of the indigenous and traditional seeds. I think this comes in as one of the things that we are horrified about, because policies are imported and the policies are made by agri technocrats, most of whom are schooled in overseas universities, and they bring in their doctorates to come and impose laws and policies that do not reflect on the other side of farming, that does not reflect on the smallholder farmers' needs, that actually takes away their right and freedom to choose the kind of seed that they want. And in the end, we are also having the disappearance of the seeds that have sustained the African people over the long period. This is the small grain. It is important that we point this out, that the kind of policies that governments are being forced to enact and to adopt are only meant to serve the interests of the private companies that are supplying seeds and chemicals to Africa. So it is important, actually, I think part of our pushback is also on the element of seed, that we should be allowed to have our own seed, and that the governments, as you have already mentioned, are actually colluding with the private sector so that we end up having the seed that we do not want, and also being forced to buy seed in each farming season. Whereas in the past, our way of doing things was to keep seed from what we produce, so that come the next season, we are not supposed to go into our own pockets for us to be able to grow the crop for the season. But we are supposed to be dependent on our own seed, which is kept, which is also well adapted to the conditions where it is supposed to be grown. Not that which is imported, one which is not as nutrient dense as the one that we have locally. So it is very, very important for us to note that the monoculture, as you have already pointed out, is not only harming us as far as our nutrition is concerned, but it goes further to affect the biodiversity in which we are doing our farming. So other than actually targeting the people that are consuming the food, it is also doing greater harm to the environment and to the biodiversity. And it is also one of the greatest contribution to the issue of climate crisis that is affecting the whole world and mainly affecting Africa. So we are looking at all these components that are building up together and that are being deliberately put together to work against the needs and the rights and freedoms of the African farmer. So it is important that we take note that the issue of the legislation which criminalizes the use of uncertified seeds, which actually the ones that sustain most of the African smallholder farmers, is something that is hindering, is actually the shovel that has been given to the smallholder farmer to dig himself into the pit. I'm speaking in reference to what Wise actually said in his piece. So it is important for us to ensure that seed is not forced down the throats of the farmers, because that is not what they need. And we just were also looking at it that as we postulate into the future, what would happen on the day that the private sector that is supplying seeds would decide that there is no more good profit and they would want to shift, when all seed is now being manufactured from the laboratory? What would happen to the African farmer? Maybe it's a question that nobody has looked at, and maybe that Agra has not looked at. But what would happen when it is no longer profitable for the seed companies to continue working in Africa, when they would have destroyed our seed? It seems that what we are headed for is a disaster for the African farmer and the disaster for the African people, because they are being tied to a system that they don't have control over, and a system that can actually end with Africa being in a greater disaster than what they are trying to extricate us from.
No doubt.
Thank you very much,
Sabine. Absolutely. Absolutely. That is the voice of Gabrielle Mayangadzi, Program Manager at SAFSI, South African Faith Communities Environment Institute. And he is a panelist at the conference being put on by Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa. That's AFSA. And it's entitled No Decisions About Us Without Us.
This is Sabrina Jacobs, and we'll be right back after this message from KPFA.
KPFA Radio is a community-powered, listener-supported radio station based in Berkeley, California. We are able to bring you this content through donations and support from our listeners. Please consider supporting KPFA through a donation by visiting www.kpfa.org/donate. And now let's get back to the program.
Welcome back to A Rude Awakening.
And Gabrielle, I am so glad you brought up the legislative part. I wasn't sure if that was something that you wanted to go into, but I definitely want to ask you if there's been any type of, through your work, if there's been any type of revelation as to why Agra, I guess they've changed their name too. Definitely want to talk about that if we could have enough time. They've tried to rebrand themselves, but we'll just call them the Green Revolution people, the Green Revolution idiots. How's that? But what is the incentive for these African countries to buy into this? What is the incentive for these African countries to buy into the destruction of, you know, not only the land, but the people, the culture? Who would be so absent-minded, so just lost in greed to the point where they are willing to sell all of that off? These legislators in these African countries, why are they willing to do that? What is the incentive? Go ahead.
Thank you for bringing that dimension up, Sabrina. You touched that in passing. I think, number one, the element of greed. It actually comes up as one of the things that we see as the factor that has caused most of the leaders to go down this route, which is very destructive to the African community in terms of the traditions, in terms of the food sovereignty, and also in terms of the ability to self-determine the future. When we have a look at it, I think there is a system of bringing us to this kind of a scenario, where you find young people are sponsored to go out and study. And as they go out, they are meant to study things that are not yet in our countries. So because they have gone through the programs and learned about genetic modification, they would want to come back and be relevant to our society. So definitely those are the first ones that becomes the front line for AGRA to fight the ordinary people in Africa, because they would come equipped with their MBAs and with their doctorates in genetics, and they would want to come and demonstrate what they have learned. And therefore, all the policies that we are getting, and this is why I was saying, they are actually exported from the universities that they have learned from. So that is the tool that have been used. Educate the young people, make them quite zealous about what they have learned so that they want to apply and put it into practice, despite that they have not looked at the context. They have also not had the opportunity to look at the alternative or to look at what has been in existence. Our indigenous knowledge system works well for us. We would want an improvement on what we were already doing in a manner that respects the environment. In the past, the African people have had one common thing right across all of Africa, and that is the element of sustainability. Whatever they would use it in moderation so that the next generation will be able to partake of the good that is provided by nature. And this is all gone when we actually apply science, which is learned from outside the environment where it is supposed to be learned, and without also due consideration of what has been happening in the past, without an appreciation of why we are where we are, they just take off and would want to come in and impose things that have not worked well for us. And I think our position is vindicated by the studies that have been done. First, maybe by WISE, when he actually did an evaluation and realized that AGRA had missed the targets. Later on, we actually have the other evaluation that was done by Mathematica, which also took note of the fact that AGRA had missed its headline objectives. And so we are quite vindicated by what has actually happened. The data that is in place shows that our position is the one that is correct, that they never did a good baseline of where we were before they started bringing in this. So the element of greed from our politicians is also another element that is actually ruining us further. Take, for instance, this upcoming summit. It is priced in such a manner that all the smallholder farmers are unable to attend, paying $350 for a person to attend this meeting is out of reach of the most of the small African smallholder farmers, and factor in also maybe the flights, accommodation, and all the expenses that are related to traveling for this summit. It means already they are excluded, and this is why we are saying there should be no decision for us without us. And this decision, whatever decision they are going to come up with, is not in the interest of the smallholder farmer, because the greedy ones are the ones who are sponsored to attend. Most of them, when you would find, are they sponsored by the very beneficiaries of the entire system, which are the seed companies and the fertilizer companies and the pesticide companies that are in this particular meeting. And maybe when we look at it, who are the major beneficiaries when we are into this system that AGRA has imposed on Africa? All the research is done by outside organizations. The supplies is done by the multinational corporations. what it means is that in itself is already excluded. The only people that are brought in to actually enjoy part of the fruit and also to actually endorse what is happening are the politicians. And they will do it for their personal gain and not for the good of the general person in Africa. And as it stands, this summit is endorsing that which is not wrong. Maybe this takes me to also want to talk about why did AGRA not want to now be associated with the very basic thing that led to the establishment of AGRA. They do not want to be known as the Green Revolution anymore. Why? They know it is destructive, but they are in there too deep. They can't actually move out. They would not want to acknowledge the mistakes that they have done so that they would have a turnaround and support those that have been feeding Africa for all these generations, who are the smallholder farmer practicing agriculture in a sustainable manner. And this is our call. Let's have these funders supporting the smallholder farmer to improve on what he has been already doing. Let us have science looking at the information that is already there in terms of the indigenous knowledge systems and improve on what has been happening and not want to reinvent farming in Africa. African food has been there and has been thriving under the condition that those that have learned about it over generations have been doing it. There is sufficient knowledge to take us through, but not that which is coming from outside and one which is unrelated to that which is important. And the important thing is to sustain the biodiversity and the environment in Africa.
No doubt. I couldn't have said it better. There's just this, again, being on the periphery, being outside, looking in, having never been to Africa, you know, having origins there, but never having never been there, you know, have never had the privilege to go. And there is this perspective of, oh, the poor Africans, oh, they're starving. Oh, you know, I'm probably dating myself, but that, you know, the We Are the World the effort and the USA for Africa and it's just this, oh, poor Africa. It doesn't make any sense. You know, thank goodness for the internet on a lot of levels, right? And other levels it's pretty annoying, but you know, because now information gets around quicker. We know what's really going on. It's easy to get the real information about what's happening in Africa and the decimation of the land, of the people, of the culture by AGRA. And there's no amount of rebranding that AGRA can do, their green revolution. There's no amount of covering it up that they can do, you know, at this point, because it is known, the information is out there. And there's a great article, tweet, U.S. Right to Know, Stacey Malkin has put the actual documents out there as far as what is happening, as far as what the UN has been reporting, how this failed Green Revolution is showing itself. The numbers are there, and they're hosting it in Tanzania, and Tanzania has been one of the countries that has been hurt the most from this and from the so-called Green Revolution. I mean, all of the African countries, I think it's 13 or 14 of them, right, Gabrielle? It's about 13 yes. countries. Yeah, about 11, 12, between 12 and 13. But
18.
Yeah, 13 countries. So it's mind-boggling. It's absolutely mind-boggling. And the greed, once again, you know, it's a global thing. But I think it's the most egregious in the continent of Africa, what Bill Gates and his cronies are doing, and just the you know, the dangling of that apple from the tree, right, Gabrielle, of education. It's something that you don't want to deny. It's something that you don't want to deny your children. So of course you're going to go for it. Of course you're going to say, oh, well, my child went to Oxford. My child went to Harvard. My child went to Stanford. My child went to Yale. And they're bringing this back. But with that knowledge, I think the next question is, and I think the question that needs to be posed to the kids that are coming back to their country, coming back to their home, coming back to their families is, okay, if you've got that PhD, if you've got that doctor, you've got that master's in genetics or whatever, or advanced farming or techno fixes, then apply it to what you already know, apply it to what your community already knows and has known for generations and generations, like you've been saying, Gabrielle. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, okay, if you apply that knowledge, that thousands of years of knowledge with what you're learning in some book somewhere in Europe, in the United States or what have you, you know, then they should be able to see that it doesn't compute, right? That would be the next question. You know, that's the question I would pose to these kids that are coming back with their so-called degrees, I guess you could say in this case, right? But Gabrielle, do you have any last words? We got to go ahead and wrap it up here. Again, folks, I'm speaking with Gabrielle Mangangadze. He's a program manager at SAFSI, South African Faith Communities Environment Institute. Of course, they're in South Africa. And this is all ahead of a conference being put on by AFSA, Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa. And it's entitled, No Decisions About Us Without Us, Leading African Farmer Groups Challenge, AGRA, I don't think they're called AGRA anymore, but whatever, AGRA Summit Over Corporate Dominance. And this is a corporate, this is a so-called corporate, they're trying to take over the continent of Africa, the continent of Africa with their techno fixes. Gabrielle, what say you in these last this last minute here? Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I think, Sabrina, you hinted on one of the things that they take away their legacy in terms of, for any organization, you'd want your legacy to be remembered. But when a whole organization takes down information that they have accumulated over the years, it means the information is not good enough, it's toxic. And thanks to Stacey for bringing it back to say, this is what they have been doing over the years, because we need to have that truth so that it would help us to go into the future. Things that are imposed without a thorough study of what has already been in existence are short-lived. And they always say lies have short legs. So we need to also have that put out for all the public to be able to judge. For those that are shareholders in the companies that are bringing so much suffering to Africa, to take stock of themselves, to hold themselves accountable to the kind of disaster that they are bringing to Africa in the name of profits, to ask themselves, is this morally right that they support, that they are part and parcel of the organizations that are bringing suffering packaged as something that is going to support Africa? We want assistance, we want support, but the kind of support that we need is that which we are also being involved in. We would want support that leaves us within the element of dignity. We would want support that is honest, support that would bring a benefit, not only short-term benefit, but one that would put humanity on the pedestal of success in the future, not to be short-sighted, not to look at our own generations. They always say we owe the human, our future to the next generation. And we should give it to them that when they also come in, they would find a world that they would be able to do the best for everyone. Let us not only have a look at what it is that which we stand to benefit, but we should look at it fully with the eye that humanity should benefit from all the activities that we are doing. We shouldn't be selfish. We shouldn't be self-centered, but should want to be exemplary in all that we are doing. In Africa, the consideration is that whatever is happening, the entire community is the one that is supposed to benefit. And also, the future generation should find our environment in a good state, that they are also able to make their lives, which are comfortable, and leave it for future generations. Sabrina, I would want to challenge those that are supporting the organizations that are bringing this kind of suffering to Africa. As a shareholder in a seed company that does not consider the rights and the freedoms of the people in Africa, are you doing the right thing? Is it morally right? That would be the question that I would want to leave with the people out there. And to Agra, I would also want to ask them a question. Why is it that you are taking away the legacy of your organization by removing all the information from your website? If the intention is good, why not admit the mistakes and take a different direction that would actually save the people of Africa from the disaster that is looming? Thank you very much, Sabrina.
Okay, lies have short legs. Gabrielle, I got to use that one. I've got to take that one from you. Lies have short legs. Exactly. They remove. Yeah, that's the other part. Thank you so much for bringing that up. Gabrielle, it has been an education as usual. Every time I talk to you, it's just illuminating. I tell you, this is something else. So folks, all the information that we've been discussing here, that I've been discussing with Gabrielle Mayangadzi, Program Manager at SAFSI, South African Faith Communities Environment Institute, is going to be on the social media. I will post it onto the KPFA website. It is there. You can see what Bill Gates and his gang are doing, how they are ravaging, doing the best they can to ravage the whole continent of Africa. They've only gotten to 13 countries. And there is a fight ensuing within those 13 countries, right? And that fight starts with knowledge. It starts with truth. As far as morals, Gabrielle, these people do not have morals. Along with the offer of sending their children to get educated in the Western world, you know, there is the cold, hard cash, right? There is that cold, hard cash that is being offered up. So that supersedes morals on so many different levels. It really, truly does. It's a sad state of affairs, but, you know, I think that's the other part of it as well. It's the other part of the incentive that makes it so easy for these African leaders to say, hey, that's all right. And legislators to say, hey, it's okay. You know, that's all right. We'll just crush that. We'll just crush a million, you know, a millennia worth of knowledge. We'll just go ahead and crush that for your in exchange for your techno fixes. Yeah, it's just absolutely sad. Gabrielle Mayangadzi, thank you so much for being on A Rude Awakening once again. I look forward to speaking with you in the very near future. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sabrina, and thank you for affording us this opportunity to tell the world what is happening in Africa. Thank you.
Yes, tell them the truth. And now we're going to hear a description of how AGRA has affected some of the communities from panelists at the Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa conference that are on the front lines. And this is an excerpt from the conference that was convened on August 30th, ahead of the AGRA summit being held starting on the 5th of September in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. And this panel was moderated by Susan Nakakawa of Grain. Then you will hear the voices of Ann Mena of Biba, Kenya, and AFSA, who's been on the show, Juma Shabani, who is a farm leader in Tanzania, and Juliet Nangamba, and she's a part of the Zambia Alliance for Agroecology and Biodiversity. Unfortunately, I could not include Mamadou Goïta because all of his comments and speaking parts, if you would, were in French. So sorry about that. But let's go ahead and take a listen and hear how AGRA has affected these folks in their communities.
Your question, Susan, the reality on the ground. I come from Kenya, and speaking from that angle is that AGRA is headquartered in Kenya. And since its inception in 2016, with so many huge promises of, for example, dealing with the issue of the chronically undernourished people, you see, like the 13 countries that AGRA initially was focusing on, there has been an increase of about 50% in hunger. Many may ask, okay, is the hunger because of the current COVID-19 and later the Ukraine crisis that led to the increasing cost of grains, especially wheat? No. By around 2018, already the hunger, the chronic hunger had risen to about 31% in the AGRA focus countries. So you find, in terms of reality, after all the promises that had been made and billions are poured into supporting this green revolution model, nothing much has been achieved. My other point is that when you look at some of the criticisms that we as the Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa made, especially last year and the year before, writing even to the AGRA donors and urging a move towards supporting and funding agroecology, what AGRA has ended up doing is making some cosmetic changes. For example, they have dropped their Green Revolution name, but still are known as AGRA, but still continue to push that model that is more interested in pushing the Green Revolution agenda in Africa by the intense use of synthetic fertilizers and other agro inputs that are mostly a source from corporates and the multinationals. At the end of the day, the beneficiary in the agriculture sector becomes the multinationals or the few companies that are working with them. So in reality, you're seeing it's fostering a lot of pro-business and policy changes within Africa governments. Even within the Africa Union, you see changes in our laws, which is something that's very serious, because once laws are changed and we are promoting a fertilizer subsidy program, which is not sustainable in Africa, the impact on our GDP has been quite huge, and the countries are really struggling. And again, as the Alliance of Food Sovereignty in Africa and members here representing the huge Pan-African network, we continue to urge the funders that are putting money into the AGRA to move the money and support agroecology, where we use local solutions to deal with the hunger crisis and the food crisis in Africa. Thank you.
So there are no changes in Kenya. That's what Anne is telling us here.
None at all.
Juliet, Zambia is the poster child for industrial agriculture. In just a minute, is this true?
Yeah, I think Zambia has been seen to be one of those countries that have been doing very well in terms of its agriculture sector, because it has promoted a lot of what we see as a green revolution. But I also want to paint a picture of what this looks like in Zambia. So despite all this promotion of the green revolution, we still see very long food scarcity periods in our communities. We see increased hunger months in the communities. Some communities are going 6 months with food scarcity. We see limited access to inputs such as seeds. Seeds have become more expensive and highly controlled. We are still challenged with malnutrition in Zambia. We have 30 to 34% of children who are undernourished due to limited dietary diversity and micronutrient deficiency. This is largely because the model of agriculture promotes a lot of monocultures, and we see only maize and now soybeans being grown a lot. We see highly dependent soils and dependent farmers on the fertilizers and hybridized seed, a system of control, and this is limiting a lot of the food sovereignty that the country is supposed to enjoy. We have seen women who have become disempowered because they have limited access to resource to produce food for their families, because the current model of production doesn't favor women, but it favors men who have access to resources. We also see now a big push for farming blocks, which disempower smallholder farmers, especially women farmers, and turning them only into, you know, a labor source because they have limited access to land. I think in the past few years, a lot of our laws are changing, not only in Zambia, but across the continent, especially those laws that have to do with agriculture production, seed laws. Yeah.
Thank you, Juliet, for that. We'll dive straight to Juma, who's based in Tanzania, where the conference is set to happen in a few days. Juma, what do things look like in Tanzania?
No, I hear you, and thank you very much. First of all, AGRA in Tanzania has been operating through different projects, at least 17 in the entire country, which focus on agro dealer, as Pastor just said, transformation in terms of transforming and what they call modernizing agriculture from what they call traditional to more commercial version agribusiness model of agriculture. But also what we see is a change of policies, and especially at the national level, where we see clearly the manipulation in terms of changing policies, in terms of changing legislations on seeds, on land, on markets, and on agro inputs, especially pesticides, fertilizers, to make them more available and distributed. But indeed, that is the way to mechanize agriculture and food system in the country through the projects that they operate in the country, and also through manipulation of policies and legislations. And indeed, now AGRA has presented itself as the chief advisor of all policies in the country, in the ministry. And through that, that's why I say it's manipulation of policies. And very, very, very clearly, the focus has been in the Southern Highlands, where it is considered as a breadbasket. And that is where you have a lot of farmers who now have fallen victims of these interventions and policies of AGRA in association with programs like SAGCOT, Southern Agricultural Growth Corridor Program, but also...
You've been listening to A Rood Awakening. You can find us on Twitter at Rood KPFA, Instagram, Sabrina Jacobs Radio Host, and Facebook, A Rood Awakening. Tune in to A Rood Awakening Fridays at 8 a.m.
I hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you want to find more KPFA radio content, log on to www.kpfa.org. Also, follow us on social media by visiting Facebook at KPFA 94.1 and Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at KPFA Radio. Plus, check out our KPFA TV video content on YouTube and Twitch.tv at KPFA Radio. Subscribe to this podcast and stay updated to when we release episodes of shows representing the best of KPFA Radio.